Hello and welcome to Playthrough. I'm Jim Middleton, and joining me for Metroid Prime Episode 2 are Andy Gilmore.
Hi everyone.
Mads Christensen.
Hello.
And Chris Worthington.
Hello and Merry Christmas. Can we still say that?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It's that awkward week, isn't it, as we record this, between sort of Christmas and New Year. So no one knows what, no one knows what to do with themselves. No one knows what day it is.
The tree's up, and it's Christmas until the tree comes down, and my tree's still up.
Yeah. It's my favourite week of the year, this. Most people are off work, and even if you're in work, it's short days and it's easy days. Well, for me anyway, I appreciate that is not the case for everyone at all. But in my world, if you're in work, you tend to be in work for fewer hours. And if you're not in work, it's brilliant because you know the emails aren't piling up in work. So yeah, I love this kind of, this hinterland between Christmas and New Year.
Hinterland, I like that. I like that, hinterland. So have you had a good Christmas?
Shall I go?
Yeah, go for it.
We were just saying in the old virtual green room, someone said, have you had much time with the PS5? To which the answer was no, not at all. I've had, my little boy's turned it into a Fortnite machine already. And Jim, you're a Fortnite player. Have you played Fortnite on the PS5 with the haptic triggers on the controller?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I quite like it.
Do you?
Yeah.
He was completely freaked out by it. My son, who's 9.
Oh, no.
He hated it. He was like, he said, Daddy, there's something wrong with these controllers. I can't push the shoulder buttons.
Oh, no.
So I had to, he was convinced that the controller was broken. So I had to go in to the PS5 settings and turn off the force feedback on the triggers. So he's basically now got a DualShock 4. and he's the boy's enjoying Fortnite again. But what it has meant and what has been lovely is I now have free and unrestricted access to the PS4. So it's all of a sudden I've got a new PS4. It's wonderful. So I've also managed to convince the missus that the PS4 needs to be on the big TV, which is the one with the jazzy 4K and HDR. So I've now got the PS4 installed in the living room with the wife's blessing on the big TV. So I've, over the last couple of days, I've probably spent about 8 hours on Final Fantasy VII Remake, and I'm almost at the end game on that now.
But so is your PS5 on a non-HDR 4K TV?
No, so the PS5 is on a 4K gaming monitor. It's on a computer monitor, which does have HDR.
Nice.
But anybody listening to this is saying, will be screaming at their whatever their device is, you are wasting your PS5 because gaming monitors do not give off good HDR, and they would be absolutely spot on. The difference between the PS4 Pro on that monitor and on the TV, it is night and day, complete night and day. So when I do play the PS5, which I will do, a PS5 is for life, not just for Christmas, you know, this is the case. it doesn't concern me that I have not really played the PS5 yet. I will. I will spend many, many, many hours on it. But when I do, I will cart it into the living room and then cart it back again. Yeah. I think that's the only way really to play it. But I think at some point, what I might do is wait for the Black Friday sale 2021 and see if I can pick up a kind of mid-range but decent 4K TV for our kind of playroom and get that. But again, planning permission will need to be obtained from my Obergruppenführer before before I venture down that road.
Start working on your bid.
Oh, it's all the groundwork's gone in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
No, I'm the same, really. I've obviously, I just bought a PS5 and I've spent Christmas playing the Evercade. So, yeah, very little PS5 time for me. What about yourself, Andy?
Yeah, I've managed to fit in a little bit, so a bit more slow progress, albeit, but putting a little bit more time in on Black Ops. Just thinking ahead here, getting my Modern Warfare head on my shoulders here, so been putting a little bit of time in with that, which is good. Really, really enjoying it. Fantastic. Getting to know the PS5's ins and outs a bit better. And other than that, similar to you, actually, just a little bit of time on the Evercade. I got the, also, I think, as you did, Jim, got the Atari Lynx cartridges for that.
Yep.
and on which was Blue Lightning, which is one of the games I've always wanted to play from. I remember when I was probably, I guess I would have been, what was that,
89, 90 maybe.
Yeah, I think 89 rings a bell, actually. So I remember at the time being absolutely mad about anything along these lines. I'd played the Afterburner arcade. I'd watched Top Gun as a film, all these things. And it's kind of partly where my absolute love of aviation came from. And I always remember seeing Blue Lightning at the time and thinking it was a game I always wanted to play, but it was just unobtainable at the time, unfortunately, largely due to cost. But it was a local, I don't know what the equivalent down south would be, but we used to have a, it might have been, but down south as well, was there a chain called, did you have a John Menzies, John Mingus's?
Yeah, so, we did in Liverpool,
yeah. I remember going in and picking the box up on the shelf. There were so many times my brother and I would go up there and look at it, and it's just one of these games I was desperate to play, so I don't know why I hadn't managed to get around to it up until this point. I guess it's probably a less accessible game than maybe some other games of that era have been. So that was definitely one ticked off the bucket list, was being able to play it. And I have to say, it's a really impressive game. It's quite a technical marvel when you think that that was 89 on a handheld, and playing it now on an Evercade in 2020, I was still really impressed by it technically.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it holds up quite well, doesn't it? I thought, yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of game is it? I've never played it. Scrolling shooter?
Similar to basically Afterburner, but albeit I would say it just, it's very similar to Afterburner. And it's kind of I see that kind of type of game is one that I've always stuck with. And I guess it's sort of, you know, a very early version of, you know, sort of led into something like the Ace Combat series, which I absolutely love these days. It's cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, enjoyed that.
Did you ever play the new Afterburner game that came out on the sort of PS3, Xbox 360? It was a digital only game.
No, but I know it's meant to be good.
Yeah, I've heard it's really good. Really good.
Yeah. No, it's primarily been the Ace Combat series that I've stuck with, but I will need to go off and investigate that one.
So it's really easy to poo-poo these, you know, when you think, especially of around that late PS2, early PS3, Xbox 360 era. They did bring back a lot of these franchises, and it's really easy just to dismiss them as being, oh, they must be rubbish. But I was reading a review of Shinobi on the PS2, which is a game I was aware of back in the day, but I would have just looked at it and thought, oh, yeah, Shinobi used to be good,
yeah,
and then just ignored it. But I was reading a review of it in an old 2002. I was actually reading that magazine because it had the review of Metroid Prime in it. So I was reading that. I just read through the magazine, and it had the review of Shinobi, and it got 8 out of 10. And for Edge, that is really good.
Yeah.
And they were saying a lot of good things about it.
Yeah.
There is value in this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. Definitely. And Mads, last but definitely not least.
Yeah. So we went into lockdown again over Christmas, well, just before Christmas. So I've had lots and lots of time in the cottage. And the most modern thing I've been playing is my GameCube, I think. I brought the GameCube there and the Wavebird so I could play some Metroid Prime. So getting up early in the morning, I've got three teenagers now. So one of them is only 12, but she sleeps like a teenager. So they don't get up until about 11. And I get up around 8, 9, make myself a cup of coffee, and then I have the entire living room for myself just playing some Metroid Prime. So it's been beautiful, mate. Beautiful. Oh,
this is not what a man with two children under two wants to hear, Mads. 5 o'clock is a lie-in for me.
And that is after 3 hours sleep.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You crazy man, Mr. Gilmore. Yeah. Crazy man. Yeah.
What's cool can soothe, can perform, can give maximum entertainment at all times. This podcast can. Retro Asylum GTX, nostalgic engineering.
Metroid Prime then, Jim.
Metroid Prime.
Where were we?
So, where did we get to? Whoa, where were we? We was in Fendrana Drifts when we left it. We'd just beaten Shigoth.
Yep.
And I believe we was in the ice ruins.
Yeah, we were. Can I just before we start talking about kind of what we did next, I actually, listening back, because I edited our episode one, and I kind of made the note to try and answer a couple of questions. So one of the things we were talking about is how frequently the game notifies you of the next critical path objective.
Yeah.
Did you get a definitive answer on this?
Well, no, I didn't.
No, I can find one either.
So I'm not going to give any massive insight here, but I will give you my little two penneth worth, having then played the game on. So I'm playing the GameCube NTSC version, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of the differences between international and the US NTSC version. So I'm playing the US NTSC version, obviously on the GameCube. And I think there are definite differences from what you guys were saying about the frequency of your notifications with the version I'm playing. So with the version I'm playing, it leaves you for about, after you complete a critical path objective, it leaves you for about 15 or 20 minutes of in-game time before it tells you what to do next. And it will tell you what to do next, whether you know exactly where you're going and you're heading there anyway, or you're frolicking or you're floundering. It will give you, and then it tells you about every 20 minutes after that, it will flash up and you have to put the map on to turn it off. And it was contrasting that with what Mads was saying about the fact that he felt it was a little bit too in your face. It kept notifying you all the time. Is that the case, Mads? It's much quicker than every 20 minutes or so?
No, I don't think so, actually.
Is it the same?
It feels right. I think somebody last time said it was often when you load anew, if you boot up the game and load a save, then 2 minutes in, it'll give you that notification if you've been there for a long time anyway. But other than that, no, I think 20 minutes, half an hour seems about right.
Okay, and what about you guys on the Wii? Does it do it differently?
So that to me sounds about right.
Yeah, okay. I've not noticed any sort of definitive, like, every 5 minutes you'll get a notification.
Yeah, okay.
Interestingly, there is an option that you can switch it off in the option on the Wii version. If you go into options, you can switch off hints and tips.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
That is not there. In the GameCube version, you can change the opacity of her visor, but you can't, which is completely pointless. Well, why would you want to bother with that? Maybe some people do. I don't know. But yeah, that would actually be a useful option to have, unlike changing the opacity of her visor, which is completely useless.
I've left it on, which I'll come to multiple times during this section of the playthrough.
Yeah, I'm the same. I think in an effort to get a definitive answer to that, I find out that there was the option to switch off. And I thought, why would you ever want to switch it off? But also, just on that note, I was having a look. I find actually it was on the actual Metroid wiki there. There was all about I'm just looking at it here. It is a very, very long list of literally every difference, or what I thought would be every difference between the Wii and the GameCube versions, but doesn't ultimately refer to the hint system in any way whatsoever. It does have one that, for you especially, Mads, I did think about going in and trying to find some way to edit this wiki page and remove any evidence whatsoever, but I don't know if you've seen this or not. But so on the Wii version, it says there's three difficulties. There's normal, veteran, and hard. It says the normal difficulty, this is on the Wii version, the normal difficulty is a new, easier difficulty, while veteran reproduces the normal difficulty in the original GameCube release. Okay. So I'm playing it on
playing on easy mode.
Yes.
So it is official.
Well, I would argue I'm playing it on normal. So it's but yes, compared to what you guys are playing, then it would maybe suggest that you've got a slightly, well, you do have a between that and our baby controls, Jim, I think we're fighting a losing battle here.
Yeah, definitely. I did have a look as well while we're chatting about this. I think, Chris, was it you mentioned, so me and Andy have been playing it in widescreen mode, and you said it looked stretched from the pictures that you'd seen. So I had a look into that, and it looks like it was optimized for widescreen for the Wii version.
Yeah, but touched up, wasn't it?
But for whatever reason, they didn't optimize the HUD visuals. They just stretched the HUD.
Yeah, that and that's what. Yeah, I see that, and I went back and actually looked at your screenshots and was like, that's exactly it. The actual image of the game looks perfect, but the HUD does look stretched.
Yeah, which is just bizarre. Why?
Strange.
Yeah.
How difficult must it have been just to kind of write that aspect ratio of the HUD? Haven't touched up the actual visuals. I don't know. Maybe it is really difficult, and I just don't know what I'm talking about. But it, I don't know, just doesn't feel like it will be too much of a stretch.
You wonder, no pun intended.
Exactly. But yeah, do you know what's interesting about the difficulty? Because it's quite misleading, that, isn't it? I mean, because if I'd have fired up the Wii version, to be fair, you are playing it on baby mode, but to be fair, I would have also selected normal.
Yeah.
Because I would have thought, well, normal's the default difficulty.
Yeah, so I think you've only got normal or veteran that's actually available to you, and I think once you complete it on either of those, it then opens up that third difficulty option. So yeah, exactly as you say, to me, I looked at it and thought, well, that's either normal or hard, and I don't think I've ever played a game on hard in my life, so I stuck with normal.
Yeah.
The other question I answered, I did answer this one definitively because it's quite an easy one. Andy, we were talking about, does the map show the entire map of the game? Because I was caring for you, you see, because I was thinking about your map anxiety. The answer to that, unfortunately, is no, it doesn't.
Oh.
So further sections are added as you uncover them.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So by the end of this podcast, we've still not unlocked. I won't have unlocked everything on the map.
I think we have now seen all of the map, or we have. Yeah, we've certainly unlocked the different. I think the last section is the mines. Yep. That's the last new section.
Okay.
The face and mines are quite big, actually. And multi-layered.
Yes, they are.
Yes. Multiple levels. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, the only section, isn't it, actually, where you do have multiple levels, the only one we've seen.
Yeah,
anyway.
I think so. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, Jim. I promise I won't interrupt anymore.
That's
all
right.
As you were, my friend.
That won't be true.
So where were we? We was in Fendrana Drifts. We're in the Ice Ruins. We've just beaten Shnigoth, and we've just unlocked the Wave Beam. So we're going to start. We head west. I think is the first sort of start of this chunk of this what we're going to cover in this episode. We end up in a sort of a big courtyard area. It's like a little puzzle room, a couple of morph ball dash switches that activate like a snake mouth where water pours in, floods the room. Pretty simple sort of puzzle. But there's another timed platform section. We can get an energy tank, another energy tank in this room.
So can I just interrupt you then? Because something that was great after getting that new wave beam, just immediately when you get out from the quarantine room or whatever it's called, where you beat Shigoth, then you get into this little area where there are these electrical blobs that float around. They throw electrical bombs at you.
Yeah,
how good is it finally to be able to kill those things?
Yeah.
That is so nice. Yeah. So this is what I love with this game, with all of the weapons and the power-ups and the different things you pick up that make your suit better. There's always immediately afterwards this very, very gratifying thing to do, action to do immediately, where you can see, I can use this now. I can do this. It's beautifully done.
Yeah, it's spot on that, Mads. I mean, that is such a cool design point, isn't it? That they give you a payoff straight away.
Yeah, and those have actually been quite a headache. There are some tunnels where you're trying to avoid them, and they have these brothers that send out three beams of energy that revolve around
the
tunnel.
They're pulse bamboos, aren't they?
To make be the ball and roll at the exact right time to get past them.
Yeah.
Finally, they're no problem anymore. You can just shoot the bastards.
Yeah. And they sort of gravitate towards you as your charge. If you charge your beam, don't they? Yeah.
And I thought that was brilliant as well. I mean, that the first that's only the blue ones that drop the bombs. They go towards you when you charge the beam, and immediately I didn't know that was what was happening. So I was charging the beam, and it's all the way up in my face. I loved it.
Yeah, it's very cool.
And we're sort of headed. We're just making our way over to the research center.
So I missed the save point in that cavern, Jim, where you have to fill up the water.
Okay.
My strategy here is to kind of pick a direction and follow it. before I then go back and check the other one. And I did not choose the direction that led into the save room.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a way before you get another save point.
Is it? I always make a point of just checking for save rooms because, the thought of having to just replay like an hour of the game and just be like, oh, no.
Yeah, we'll come to that.
To be about, I think from defeating Shigoth to getting into this room that you're talking about, Jim, I think it took me well over an hour. I could not for the life of me find where to shoot that stalactite from that you need to drop that then creates a platform. For whatever reason, I find the stalactite and I could see, obviously, once you scanned it, and you could see that you were having to shoot it from where you're looking at it. You can see, obviously, you're having to shoot it perpendicular to what the angle is that you're looking at. But every time I went back around there, I don't know what it was, but when you come up the couple of the steps that bring you inside that building, if you like, I don't know if the wall to the left, which has actually got the hole in it that you go through, I don't know if just the way that was textured or something, but for about 45 minutes to an hour, kept missing the fact that there was a hole in that wall and kept turning right there instead and doubling back on myself. And I was literally scanning every square inch of that room. I couldn't find it for the life of me. And then eventually, obviously, did find it. And I was thinking to myself, I bet these guys did this within 30 seconds, which it sounds like you did.
It's funny that you mentioned those stalactites, though, because there's a bit in the mines that I'll come to where you've got to have the exact angle to drop it. And that drove me insane.
Takes me back to the old Tomb Raider, you know, when all the textures look the same and you're having to try and find that the next platform that you can jump to.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't think anything of it now, but imagine if you went back to the original Tomb Raider, it would be really difficult to play.
I'm pretty sure in the GameCube version, actually, we can log on to the stalactites. If you just almost aim at them, you can log on to them and then you'll hit the right place. If I didn't log on to them, I could never hit them right.
So you can't do that on the Wii version?
You can. You can lock on, but if you're... But where you're pointing your Wii remote, you can still send your missile or charge beam slightly off where it's locked on. So it doesn't sort of home in on where you're locked on.
Okay.
It almost gives you that lock on of where your camera's focused, but you still have independent aim within that lock on.
Okay.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, sounds like in some ways, then maybe we'll take that, Mads. That's the one way in which playing with the GameCube controls is easier.
Yes, auto aim, baby.
Settle for that.
So we're in the research center, and this time we've got space pirates that are alive. I think for the first time, I don't think we've come across pirates alive so far. Yeah. And we go into like an arena type room where it throws enemies at you. Nothing too challenging, really, but when you beat that, it unlocks the door and you go into the research labs. I've got a note here, Chris, your scanner meter must have been going absolutely crazy in these research labs.
I love all
labs.
This, man. I absolutely love all of this. So this is, and you get actually, this is where some of the stories start to come in, like some of the motives behind the what the space pirates are up to on Talon 4. And what I thought was really good about the plot. I mean, this game is not a massively, I said this last time, the story's optional in Metroid Prime because you don't have to scan any of this stuff. You could just blaze through doing the platforming, doing the combat, and you'd have a great time. But actually, I think the story's really, really good. You've got to go and look for it, but it is there. And what's brilliant about the space pirates is that they're not mindless evil baddies. Okay, they are a little evil, and clearly we don't like them. They are definitely baddies, but there is a purpose. I mean, they are not just there just to give you a headache. They are actually trying to do something. They're trying to use this Phazon to augment themselves and create more powerful units to go and take over the galaxy.
So I'd say you really need to, if you play this game, you really need to try to follow the story because otherwise it becomes like kind of pointless. I mean, the different, especially later on, the different enemy types you meet, now that you know that the pirates are actually working on enhancing themselves or their own, making their own elite pirates, becomes a lot more interesting. Yeah. And also later on, we get different kinds of space pirates. We'll get to that before the the end here, yeah. that are actually based on Seamus's weapon systems stuff they've found there. So you need to go scan all of those research records. And of course, if you just want to go the quick way through, you only need to scan stuff that lights up red.
Yeah.
But all the orange stuff that has the extra bonus story and so on is definitely worth scanning as well.
I love the fact that they are actually trying to do something. The fact that they are taking Samus's own weapon systems and then trying to reverse engineering. And then you see some of the logs where it says that it's not working, or there's logs about the phaser madness. So you can see through these data logs that it's not actually all their own way. They are doing stuff wrong as well.
You do get hints as well as to how to beat the different enemy types. I mean, of course, we talked about that last time, that for the bosses, you need to scan them to get some hints about how to fight them. But you do get hints about fighting the different pirate types, for example, by scanning those optional locks as well.
We're also getting hints on how to fight Metroid Prime as well, which later in this session, in the second exposition heavy bit, if you like, you start hearing about Metroid Prime in the caves.
Mm.
And one of the tips it gives you, and I don't look, guys, I'm making notes for you, okay? Don't need to worry. I know what you like with your skipping your scanning. I'll do the scanning for you.
Just give us the key points.
So Metroid Prime changes something about it throughout the battle, and at different stages of the battle, it's weak to your different weapons. So take note, because without that, I imagine it could be quite difficult. But you do get that from one of the later logs, that is one of its weaknesses.
Okay.
And here, I got a little message flash up to say that I've achieved 50% of all of the log entries in the game.
Yep. I've had that message, but I don't know if it was here or not.
Yeah, and you unlock some pretty nice concept art, which is cool.
Did you just talk about that, Chris, or did you say that it was way back in the first podcast, you said that you got, did you say that you got something for some scanning achievement? What was that one?
So I didn't, I think I was talking about what you do get.
Right, but you hadn't actually got it at that point. No, I wondered that because it was around about this point that I did get that notification. And I thought this is an indication of how much less I'm scanning than Chris, because I thought you'd said way back about halfway through the first podcast that you'd already got that. And I thought I'm obviously not scanning nearly enough.
So it's based on logbook entries, not random things which don't add stuff to your logbook.
Yeah.
So as long as you're only scanning the key bits, the pirate data, the Chozo lore, the enemies, that's what's completing your logbook.
Yeah. And you do actually need to scan stuff because, as we'll get to the next time, there are three endings to this game. And that only depends on how many percent complete you are when you face the final battle.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. If you are... Do you want to get into this now, or should we wait till the next episode?
Well, is there anything that I need to know to get the good ending? Don't tell me what the endings are.
I'd say there's no doubt you'd get the good ending. There are three endings. The bad ending, which is still good enough. It's not like bad, really. The bad ending is 74% completion or less. And you'll get above that. The good ending is 75 to 99%. And if you do get 100% completion, not only do you get the ending of the game, you get a little bit of foreshadowing about what's going to happen in the next game.
Okay. Mm. Okay. All right. Well, that's handy to know, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think anybody... Oh, maybe you, Chris, because you are a bit crazy about that. Maybe you'll get there, but I definitely won't, because I've picked up lots of stuff that I'll only see once and I never scanned.
Now, I do feel like I'm a little bit anal retentive about this scanning thing, because when I'm in a room like that research court, I'll run round about six or seven times just to make sure that I've not missed any.
Me too, but actually OCD they have these nice little visual cues for it, right? Because when you just scan over with your scan visor, those that have a very nice red or orange, and not like semi-transparent, but quite opaque red or orange, those are the ones you need to scan. The other ones have already been scanned.
Yeah.
Just on that note, when you're doing these things and you see you've got a bank of computers that's got five screens and it's five separate scans, are you quite happy with that? Or would you rather have maybe just, do you feel it's necessary to scan the five screens that you're already looking at and read five separate, quite small pieces of text? I guess what I'm getting at is I would rather have maybe one red critical, one that you scan, and maybe one orange, less critical one that you scan on those five screens, if you like, and maybe more text in one reading rather than just, because sometimes I find that by the time you've come out of that and then scanned another and come back in, it maybe doesn't quite flow as well when you're reading it.
Yeah,
I hear you. I do see what you mean. I think it makes sense because it's supposed to be what's displayed on the screen,
yeah,
isn't it? And
yeah,
you're scanning, yeah, each of the screens, and because I think if it took a while to scan, I think that would get pretty tiresome. But because it's only a couple of seconds each time, I'm all right with it.
Yeah, I think it's maybe just because there's been such a change in pace on the scanning. Once you arrive in this section, there's suddenly
into
a lot
of the mines. There's a lot.
Yeah, there's a huge,
yeah,
amount.
Yeah, yeah. They're the two sections, aren't they? And it probably does disrupt the pace of the game a little bit in those two sections because you spend a lot of time reading. It almost feels like it's an exposition dump.
So I kind of enjoyed that part.
Yeah, I
enjoy
well.
Those parts because they're always after you've had some big battle and then you can have a breather and go around, read some stuff. It only annoys me when I then die and need to go back and do the same thing again. And I need to go around and scan everything once more in the room, yeah, just to make sure I get that percentage up. That annoys me.
Oh, yeah. We've all been there.
did we find the exit okay for this room? Because the exit's in the roof of the lab.
Yeah, that was okay.
Big long jumps.
Yeah. And that takes us up into the observatory. So I got a notification at this point to the research core. But while we're in the observatory, there's another switch puzzle. And then we get a really, I thought it was a really nice sort of graphical map of the galaxy.
Mm.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, yeah. That, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I enjoyed that. Yeah, that is really cool. That I wasn't expecting that. But yeah, felt like I was in Mass Effect or something.
Yeah, definitely got Mass Effect vibes from that. Yeah.
So to anybody listening who haven't played yet, please, when you're done with the observatory and you've been looking at the... You need to scan all the planets, by the way. There's lots of story here. Yeah. When you're done and you get up to the top level, there's a safe room at one side. And there's a lot of baddies to be killed at the other side. Please do remember to save.
Yeah, I
didn't.
Absolutely. Oh no.
I lost about an hour, maybe an hour and a half of progress there.
And
I rage quit and picked it up the next day. There's a long battle after that point. And I was all the time I was thinking, there's gonna be a save point any minute now. Okay, I'm gonna beat these two guys. Okay, there's gonna be a save point any minute now.
Because we get into the they're the flying pirates, aren't we? We see for the first time.
They are, yeah. So we've climbed up to the top of the observatory, like you say. We've got the super missiles. At this point, I had still only got 25 missiles in my inventory, so a 5-point super missile was just terrifying.
These missiles can actually be used for other stuff than just killing enemies, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So they can destroy cordite.
Yeah, exactly.
Material,
some stuff when you scan it, it'll say that it's made of cordite and there's cracks in it. And that means shoot it with a super missile and then you'll open some secret.
We talked about this the last time, Jim, but the super missile is an absolute pain in the backside to fire with the Wiimote.
Because
what move was it we were talking about the last time? It would have been, I think we were just talking about bringing up the map and things like that.
The map.
Yeah,
and
so
the map and the pause,
on the Wiimote, you've got to hold down the fire button to charge it up, but then you've got to slide your thumb up far enough to press down on the D-pad, which whilst you're aiming with the Wiimote at the same time. So 9 times out of 10, for me at least, when I slide my thumb up to try and reach the down button on the D-pad, it's really, really hard to keep your Wiimote pointing in the same direction, and you almost always end up shooting just slightly off where you were intending to. And it's quite a tricky one to do quickly as well. So it becomes much more important later on. There's some of the enemies you encounter where you really need to be able to let one off quite quickly, and it's a struggle on the Wiimote at times.
What if you've only got little hands?
Well, exactly. It'd be impossible.
And it's even worse when you get a later upgrade that fires all your missiles off, and you're in the if you've got the wave beam active, before you know it, you've just launched all your missiles out. And you're,
and if you only got 25, that's going to go through those really, really quickly.
yeah. But. Yeah, we're in the research lab, really, research lab Aether. So really atmospheric research lab. And we come across our first Metroid. In this like research tank. You scan it and it jumps. It breaks the tank and jumps out of you. I jumped.
Yeah, me too. That's the first real jump scare in this game, isn't it?
It immediately
comes over and hucks your face.
Yeah.
The game feels a lot darker at this point. I mean, it is darker because it is darker, literally darker. But also, I feel because of all the lore that you're getting, it, and because you know that what they're doing here is pretty bad news in terms of their experimentation and everything else, it does feel like the tone of the game kind of goes darker a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I've got a note here as well that up until now, it's been very much sort of like exploration based, whereas this first chunk of the, I suppose, like what we've covered for episode two, it feels a lot more action based as well.
Yeah, agreed.
I definitely think the game is better when it's doing the exploration side of stuff as opposed to the action.
Yeah, I agree completely.
There's big time and still a lot of exploration to be done here. I mean, we are talking right now about the critical path, and the stuff that we've been covering in the past 10 minutes must have taken me 10 hours to do while playing, because I just love exploring instead. So I went all over all of the other areas of Magmo Cavern and Fernando Drifts and the Talanova world. There's so much to be found there, actually, that you can, even now when we don't have the gravel beam yet, but there's still so much you can get into there. And I forget, did we get, I'm gonna ask a stupid question now, did we get the double jump at this point as well?
Oh yeah we had that last time.
Did we have that last time? Okay, but that really opens up a lot of those sections as well. So it took me a long time before I even got that far into the mines part.
One thing that the more difficult enemies does mean, though, because here now we are starting to get this, the Shadow Pirates is the first one, the ones that actually, once you get the thermal visor, are quite easy to dispatch.
Yeah, that's
Space
it.
Space Pirates.
Yeah. You sort of making... Also, oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it makes backtracking a lot more difficult now, because it's all well and good. I think it was you, Mads, who said last time that backtracking, the respawning enemies isn't a problem because you can get rid of them all pretty painlessly.
Yeah.
And it's quite easy. When you're overpowered, it's quite easy to blast through. Yeah, that is the case for the Chozo Ruins and the Overworld and even the first part of Fendrana. It is not the case if you need to traipse back through that research core, and it will not be the case whatsoever when we're traipsing back through the mines, because those enemies are tough. And if you need to get good at the combat. I mean, I've got a note later on when we get to the mines. I died because I was careless with the combat. And all of a sudden now, a room full of three or four enemies, you can expect that's going to take 5 or 10 minutes to clear if you don't want to lose a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Changes up the game completely, in my opinion.
Luckily, that's changed again later on because you get more and more powerful. So three or four enemies doesn't bother me at all now. You can get rid of those in 15 seconds. Something like that.
Yeah. I think it depends on who it is, but yeah.
But yeah, you mentioned the thermal visor. We're sort of heading down to the bottom here. We eventually get the thermal visor, and then we have to sort of make our way back up. Back up through.
It's all gone dark.
Yeah, it's all gone dark. We've got turrets, we've got Metroids, we've got pirates, and we can't see any of them unless you've got the thermal visor on.
And that was actually quite spooky.
Yeah.
I just found this really, really annoying.
Yeah.
Having to go back?
No, just fighting the enemies in the dark. I just really, really struggled with it.
So I kind of liked it because all the space pirates, there were these yellow space pirates that would attack you. You could see them from afar. You could see because they were just attached to the roof. They just cling to
That's
the roof.
Right.
So you need to attack them before. So if you just walk ahead, you'll activate all of them and you'll be in trouble. But if you attack them like carefully, you can have one or two of them coming at you at the time, and you can just start out by giving them a missile in the backside that makes them a bit softer.
As it would.
Yeah, doing it like that, I really enjoyed this section, but I did initially just run for it and die. So
I made it.
How do you mean?
I was just going to say, I think I made it more difficult for myself than it needed to be by not having that many missiles at this point.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's probably why I didn't enjoy it maybe slight as much, because I'm always in the back of my mind worried about running out of missiles.
Mm.
So at what point did you frolic then and look for... Frolic is now officially the word for exploring in Metroid. At what point did you frolic for more missiles then?
We're probably coming up to it where I got massively lost and ended up finding loads of stuff purely because I didn't have a clue where I was going. we'll come up to that.
Okay. So where are we heading now? So once we end up going back, we get back to that cavern, don't we, with the water. We have to use the...
There's a puzzle switch, isn't there, behind the statue.
That's right. We have to use the super missile to destroy the cordite material over the electricity conduit, which allows us to power the door, which is something that we have to get used to because we do this a lot later in terms of lighting up conduits. And then we go to our second real boss.
Yeah.
Third, if you count the one on the space frigate.
Yeah, Thardus.
You call it what you like.
I couldn't stop thinking of Doctor Who with the TARDIS.
TARDIS. Yeah. I also went to a school with a boy called Christopher Cardus as well, and I was thinking of him. Good though, huh?
Yeah.
Good battle?
Yeah, not too difficult though, is it? It's pretty as long as you scan it, realise you've got to use the thermal visor pretty early on, which I did. Then it's just a case of sort of using that thermal visor to highlight the weak spot, shoot that, breaks the shield on that, opens up like the vulnerable part if you like, and
Yeah, so I'm obviously not too bright because I didn't scan it first and it took me a long time to figure out how to beat it. But I like that this is the first fight where switching visors in the action is something you need to do. And you can't just switch to the thermal visor all the time. You need to go to the thermal visor, wound him, and then go back to the battle visor. And it makes it a bit more interesting. So I really enjoyed it once I figured out what to do, but it did kick my ass a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, he rolls around a bit, doesn't he? And he fires this like an ice beam that freezes you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what this battle did reveal to me? That I'm not totally in love with the Metroid camera. So generally the camera is great, but when you're in the morph ball, the angle that it takes in those open environments means that you often can't see what's not immediately around you. So one of the ways to avoid the TARDIS attacks is to get into your ball and roll out the way.
Yeah.
But once you do that, you can't really see what's around you because you can't control the camera and it only shows you a kind of area around your ball. So I would often then take damage because I wouldn't know where TARDIS was or where it was coming from, which is a little annoying. And it's a few times now I've noticed that when you're in ball form, unless it's kind of that 2D view it gives you occasionally, I do actually sometimes find it quite difficult to navigate and know where I am.
Mm. So I definitely agree when we're in the boss battles. It can be a bit hard to see where you're actually going. But when you're rolling around on the levels, I don't have any problems with it, actually.
No, because it goes from behind, doesn't it? But there's something about in those boss arenas, it kind of pulls the camera above.
Yeah.
And you get almost this bird's eye view of you in the ball, which is fine if you don't need to know where you're going.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
My main problem with it is that you go into the ball form to escape, and then you roll away, and then you need to go out into like human form again. Yeah. And you always have your back to the danger at that point in time. And it actually takes her a long time to turn around.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of the animation's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
It's brilliant. But there is quite a few frames of animation where you don't have control. Mm. And that it can be troublesome. Yeah. But I love this boss battle so much, I did it twice.
Me too.
Because what happens when we get when we defeat the baddie, the boss, TARDIS, we then finally get the spider ball.
Yeah.
Which is very cool. Now, what most sensible gamers do at this point is they turn around, go back a couple of screens to the save point and wipe their brow and think, brilliant. I just thought I'd just have a little look at what was a little bit further on.
Yeah.
So at this point, you can access an elevator, which takes you down to another section of Magmoor Caverns, at which point you come out. There is actually a save point behind the damn elevator in Magmoor Caverns. Nope, completely ignored that. blazed into the room ahead of me, met with two space pirates who promptly killed me.
Hmm. Well, then you got to do it all again then.
I got to do it all again. It was nice. Like being in a pantomime. Well, we'll have to do it again then, won't we?
So what I do whenever I get a new ability in this game is that I completely go off the critical path. So the first thing I did getting the spider ball was go back, save, and then go back to all of those places I knew that was locked before and I couldn't get to and start to like pick up artifacts and whatever you find.
Yeah, yeah. The gameplay loop I find just so satisfying and compulsively addictive.
Yeah.
I think I put something about this in Discord. It's critical path, battle, upgrade, frolic to your heart's content, repeat. And it's so compelling. Like that rush of excitement you get when you find the spider ball or you later find the ice beam, that knowing that you've got so much more now to go and find.
Yeah.
Like it's like, oh, I can't wait to get back on it because I want to go back to that door that I know is over there and it's going to be something really cool.
Yeah, getting the spider ball, there was lots of places I could remember that I needed to go to, but it was a bit hard finding them. Getting the ice beam or whatever it's called, it was so easy because now you could go through all of the white doors. It's beautiful. Yeah. I went through the map and said, I need to go there and there and there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So good.
But we like you say, we end up going through to Magmoor, back into Magmoor Caverns. And I wasn't really sure where I was going here. And you mentioned about, when did I start frolicking? This was it. but I got a notification at some point telling me of a climate anomaly in the antechamber.
Yeah.
At this point, I ended up going through the monitor station. There was a door that I'd not been through. Little section where you roll around under a ground, like a great grid type area, into the storage chamber, found some missile upgrades. I ended up in for Drana Drifts and found a few more missile upgrades, totally lost. I checked a guide because I, same as what you said, Andy, in the last episode, I gave it like I think it was like an hour and a bit or something, completely didn't have a clue where I was going. I was supposed to have to climb the sun tower.
But the game tells you where to go.
It
tells you, you just didn't know how to get there.
How to get there, yeah.
Okay.
Hmm.
Okay.
I find there's a couple of times where there's maybe one route that's open to you with the upgrades that you've got. And for whatever reason, because sometimes you have to take a path that leads to another path. And there's been points in the game where I've just found myself going round and round and round in circles. And I'm trying to, and you sometimes, and it, each loop of that almost takes you sometimes 10 minutes. And then you get your heart sinks when you come through and drop down into a room or whatever. And you realize I'm back. This is back where I started. And you've got to repeat that loop the whole time or at least half of that loop, if not more, to find another branching path. So it's not that you can just quickly go from one area to the other. There's definitely a bit of, this is where the trudging rather than the frolicking comes in.
Yeah, yeah. I think this was where I got stuck as well. I got stuck for hours at some point.
Yeah,
And I couldn't figure out how to progress. And at the end, I convinced myself that it's been the fifth time that it's now told me I need to go there on the map, but I can't. There's something missing. I can't go there yet. But I got wiser. If it tells you can go there, you can go there. There is a way to go there. So just stick at it. That's what I do now. It says I can go there. I'm going to go there, see what happens. But I was quite angry with the game at this point, actually, because I spent hours just running around.
And the other thing that you can rest assured, if the game is telling you to go somewhere, you can go there. Not only can you get there, but you can do the thing that you need to do when you get there to progress.
Yes. Yeah.
Because one of the big things here is when we get there is we get this, we get the statue, which has its hands out.
Yes.
It took me forever to figure out what I had to do with that statue. Okay. Oh, it took me, I probably spent about 40 minutes.
Was this the one where its hands are like cupped?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I know what you mean now. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's got the glowing light coming up from its hands. I had no idea.
Is this the first time we encounter the Chozo ghosts, by the way?
Yeah, yeah. So just before we get to that statue, we end up back in that like sun chamber area where we fought Flagra.
Yeah. Yes.
Get an artifact.
What's that?
Yeah. We can get an artifact there as well, can't we?
Yeah, if you beat the ghosts.
Wild.
Yeah.
Did I get that?
Jim,
I
didn't know that.
No, I don't know if I got that.
So if you, when you beat the ghost, you can climb up onto Flargar's corpse. It sounds horrible, doesn't it? It's like a big dead flower. And yeah, the, there's an artifact on top.
Okay. Yeah. Right, that's one place I've got to go back to.
I didn't get that when I
did you not?
No.
I think it actually tells you when you beat the ghosts, but maybe you ran away from the ghost instead. Because it, when you actually beat the ghosts, it, it just pans up there and shows you the artifact and goes away again, doesn't it?
You can't run away because it locks the doors.
It does.
The first time you go in there.
If it showed it, then I probably, I would need to check. If it showed it, then I, there's a very good chance that I would have gone and got it. If it didn't show you, then I probably would have just carried on without, bits.
But
yeah, I think
there are now ghosts multiple places, right? I mean, as soon as you see the first ghost, then, and this is actually, this kind of annoyed me because you said, Chris, there are now some space pirates that you need to battle when you backtrack, but all of a sudden there were ghosts everywhere and they would be respawning all the time and they're actually quite hard to kill.
So they just take a long time, don't they? Yeah. I mean, they're not particularly dangerous.
No, no,
I mean, no, I've never.
I found them dangerous when there was more than one. If you get one on their own, then you can down them pretty quick. But I think when this room where you first sort of come across them, I was trying to shoot missiles at them and that doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just take
the only thing that worked, seemed to work was the plasma rifle.
You can get them with one super missile finishes them off as well. I got very good at taking them on because they were ultimately, this was part of my endless loop that I got stuck in of going round and round in circles. So you get, they've got, obviously they're teleporting around the room, but just before they attack and they fire that really annoying charge at you that effectively freezes you, they stop and it looks almost, so they raise their hands and they start to rise up a little bit. Yep. If you've already got the power beam out and have it charged, and then when at the point at which they start to raise their arms and float up, you've got just enough time to let off a super missile. You can lock onto them and let off a super missile and it kills them in one go.
Okay. I didn't know. That's a handy tip.
That's the strategy. Yeah, that's definitely the strategy. And you pretty much knock them out in one go, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
One hit kill. Yeah.
On the Wii version, at least.
But for poor Jim, though, that would be the end of his missiles if he had a room with three chosen ghosts and he wouldn't have any missiles left.
Although by now, I'd got quite a few missiles because I'd just been completely lost. So, I'd found quite a few missile upgrades by now.
Hmm.
How many artifacts have you got then? So I've got four, and I know where two more are, but
four,
I can't
five,
get them.
I can't remember now.
You can't have five. Don't do this to me. You can't have five because it's only possible, I'm sure, at this point to have collected four.
It must be four then. I must have got that one on Flagra then. I must have.
You must have done.
I've only got two, as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
But you need them all to finish the game. Am I right in thinking that? That you'll need them?
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
So I'm going to go. I'm going to have to start. It'd be better to backtrack now and get them. Otherwise, I'm going to have to go on some marathon trudging session at the end to go and pick up 8 or 9 or 10 in one go before I can finish it.
Someone on Discord did say that they bounced off it at the point where you had to then go and look for the artifacts just because it became a kind of hunt around the map. But I actually quite like solving the riddles as to where they are.
So you've been using those riddles, have you, and then going off and looking for them?
They're essential, otherwise you wouldn't have a clue where they are.
And you can only access that when you're in the sort of the artifact temple. That's the only place you can access a riddle, or is it in your logbook?
No, it's in your logbook.
Mm. Okay.
If you scan them, you add it to your logbook. But you need to scan them at the artifact temple first.
Yeah, so I've scanned all of them at the temple, but I haven't gone off specifically to try and find those yet. So I guess that's probably would save me a lot of time. Would be to just go into logbook, work out the riddles, and are the riddles fairly easy to work out? Or
yeah, they're not difficult. It basically gives you a hint as to the name of the room. So one of them says something like "at the edge of Fendrana," and there is an area called the edge of Fendrana. Mm. So
that's my sort of clue.
It's that literal.
Yeah. So I haven't actually looked at any of those clues. I've just stumbled across these artifacts.
Yeah, you do stumble across them.
I think I had about five at that point, actually. I think, so as we'll get to later on, I've been playing this game for far too long, and that's Andy's fault. But I think
I can only apologize.
Do you? That is good because, we'll come on to what we've got left later. But yeah, Mads, you are practically at Metroid Prime then.
No, I'm at the Omega Space Pirate or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After that, you find the artifacts and then it's endgame.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So we're in the thing with the statue with the cupped hands.
Mm. So the Hall of Elders.
Yeah.
Again, we've got another Ghost Chozo to deal with here, but he's on his own. He's pretty simple to get rid of. There's a missile recharge point in this room, which I don't think we've come across before.
No.
And I really enjoyed this. I really, really enjoyed this part. I'd been quite down on it up to now. I'd struggled with the Ghost Chozos. I'd struggled coming back up through that room in the dark with the scan, and I was really sort of getting down with it. I'd been lost, really getting down with it. And then we went into this awesome little puzzle room where, like you say, you have to use the morph ball into like the little Chozo hands, which rolls you towards a ramp. Depending on what switch you've got active, it rolls you in a certain direction. We've got three heat sensitive switches, which just scream Metal Gear Solid to me.
Yeah.
So I think we could only access one at the moment, initially with the wave beam. Then when we get the ice beam, there's another one that we can access.
Yeah. Took me ages to figure out that you could jump up to those three as well. I was shooting them from the ground.
Mm, yeah.
And then I couldn't work out that you could jump up there.
Yeah.
And then in the end, I was just from desperation, really, just jumping around everywhere. I found the little route up there.
Yeah, this was the point in time where I thought I couldn't go to where the map was pointing. So I started frolicking for hours instead.
Did you consult a guide, Mats?
No, I didn't use a guide. No.
You did? Did you?
Just me and Andy so far.
Andy, did you use a guide as well?
On the first episode I did, at the Findrana shoreline where there was that cordite structure that you had to blow open and then roll into the morph ball that had the switch that opened the door up on one of the other platforms. Yeah, yeah. I was saying in the first episode, I thought I'd shot that with a missile, but I must have a squint because I obviously just clipped the edge of the metal structure, so it never actually shattered, so I could have spent another. I could still be there now if I hadn't looked at a guide. So yes, I hold my hands up.
You're going to have to end up playing Teletubbies on the V Smile with these guys.
Yes, it's it. I've never ever suffered from guide guilt, so it's okay.
Do you know what we need to do at the start of every episode? We need to have a confessional where if anyone has consulted a guide, they have to confess it right away.
In fitness, I do normally, for full disclosure, I do normally, but if I put if I've put something in Discord, that's if I've used a guide, I always say that I have. I want people to feel good about using guides. It should not be. I don't think it's such a great idea to follow it through just step by step. But at the same time, if it keeps the game moving along and keeps you enjoying it, then go for it. Give it a good go.
Yeah.
I think I think you're a lot more patient than I am, Mads.
I think maybe I've just had more time these Christmas mornings here. So
it did take me a long time to figure out that I had to morph into the ball to make that statue do his 10-pin bowling impression.
Yeah. But then when you do figure that out, we go into another puzzle room, and like I say, I was really back in love with the game at this point, these little puzzle rooms. And we go into like this reflecting pool. It reminded me of what Verdo said in episode one. It just screamed Zelda to me, this. You have to drain the pool by using the bomb. And then the pool turns into like this little skate ramp when that gives you access.
Tony Hawk's again.
Yeah. Gives you access to the next floor. Mm. And I thought, that was brilliant. More of that and less enemies for me.
Yeah. And by the way, how cool is it using the spider ball as well? Like that tactile, I don't know how you do it on the Wii, but on the GameCube, you have to hold the right trigger to make it grip onto the track. It's just something really nice and tactile about it. Feels really nice.
It's the little Z trigger on the
nunchuck, isn't it?
On the nunchuck, yeah.
Okay. So you get a similar effect then. It's just something really tactile. It reminds me of, in Eco, where you have to hold the trigger to hold Yoda's hand, and there's just something really tactile about the way you do it. It reminded me of that. It's very, very nice.
But we get the ice beam at this point. So you go back into the other room. We can now access that other switch. And like you said earlier, Mads, we've got access to all those doors that had like that white shield over them now. And we got a notification, or I did at least, to head over to Fendrana Drifts.
Yeah.
Which was a heck of a trek. There was a little spider track in the elevator room in Magmoor Cavern.
Yeah.
So you can use that.
Yeah.
And you just basically follow in tunnels and some underwater sections until we get to like a gravity chamber where you get to access the gravity suit. And that enables you to sort of freely sort of move around underwater. How did you all get on with that? Because we've got all these like little tentacles and everything, haven't we, at this point? Any issues?
I hadn't really noticed that I couldn't move freely underwater, to be honest.
So there was a few places where I couldn't jump high enough without this gravity suit. So I had been quite annoyed at the underwater sections. So and immediately when I got this skill, I knew a place I needed to go, for example, so I could get some upgrades.
Joe, I actually had made it into the sunken frigate before I got the gravity suit.
Okay.
Because you can, there is a part where you can get, I'm going to sound very vague here, but there is an elevator which takes you up. If you frolic a little bit, there is an elevator which takes you out the back. It takes you up into the overworld and you're out the cave above the sunken frigate. You can actually, using the double jump, and I did it, jump from that high platform down onto the entrance to the frigate without the gravity suit.
Okay.
So and I managed to...
Yeah.
Go on, mate. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I don't even think you need to... I think you can literally just drop down from there, because that is the point where...
Can you? Yeah, did you do it then?
I got stuck. This is where I couldn't... I basically came to an impasse again. So that was ultimately when I came to go... When I did depart with the frigate, that's how I got into it.
Yeah. Without the gravity suit.
So I had the gravity suit at that point, but I guess with the gravity suit, you could come through the water, could you? And come up from the front. So that was, so I ended up coming around that way, because that ultimately I hadn't used that path yet that drops you, the one where you come out on that ledge above it. I hadn't discovered that yet. That was where I was at. That was my sticking point.
So I managed to get right into the frigate, power all the doors, unlock them, get to the save point, and I was thinking, I'm off the beaten track here. Because it was telling me to go and get the gravity suit, whatever it's in Fendrana. And I'm thinking, this is brilliant. This is a secret area. Mads won't have found this. 1-0, I was thinking. And then I got one of those messages saying, oh, suit augmentation required. You can't go any further. And I thought, oh.
So that's the path that opens up. I think I'm right in saying this. Is that the path that opens up when, because basically as soon as you had the ice beam, you could go back into that room where you turn into the morph ball. If you use the switch that you use the ice beam,
I think
I think that's the one that opens up that path that would bring you out the back way there, because that was...
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah you could... Yeah. So I think it's accessible as long as you've got the ice beam.
Yeah, it's quite cool though that you can get quite a way through a section which is ahead of you on the critical path. And it saved me a whole bunch of time later when I actually did have the gravity suit and I was meant to go that way.
Yeah.
But I got lost here as well. I'd got my gravity suit and didn't have a clue where to go again. Checked my notes for like spider tracks. I'd have found an artifact while I was sort of frolicking, if you like, at this point. And this is where I find that that missile upgrade. That I mentioned I think it was a wave beam.
And
it fires off all your missiles as long as you've got the button held down. Fires through them at a scary rate. But we got to make your way over to the mines. Has everyone found that, by the way? I'm guessing you must find it at some stage.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got it. Have you guys got it?
The wave buster, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, the wave buster. Yeah.
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 Have you used it?
It's not on the critical path, though, is it?
I've used it once, just to try it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It saved my bacon completely in the mines. Without that, I would have died a second time in the mines without saving it. And I may have struggled to go through it again.
We'll get there.
Which is a good segue, because that's where we're headed now. Mm. We're heading over to the mines. So I'd already found this area, but I couldn't go any further than the locked door that you need the thermal scanner to open.
Mm. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I'd already found it like just like say going on a frolic.
Yeah. By the way, just a big shout out. There's two pieces of music that I just wanted to mention. One is the pretty cool Fendrana Drifts remix that you get in the area where you find the power suit.
Mm-hmm.
There is Fendrana Drifts is a great track, but you get a pretty cool kind of techno remix of it.
Yeah, it's the same more sort of upbeat version of it.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Cool.
I sort of just stood there and listened to that for about 5 minutes. I that's probably my favorite bit of music in it so far.
And it was a complete shocker as well, because you're in Fendrana expecting the Fendrana music, and then you get this kind of techno remix version of it, which I thought was absolutely ace. And then the other one, and also just generally, the atmosphere in the Sunken Frigate and the music in the Sunken Frigate, I absolutely love it.
It's beautiful.
It's so relaxing being in there, because there's no enemies that are particularly threatening until you get into the mines. That whole Sunken Frigate section is my favourite part of the game.
The enemies are more funny than threatening. I mean, I like that, clam thing that opens up and tries to suck you in.
Yeah, send the missile in quick.
Yeah, I always think they look like the bloopers from Mario. That's what I think of every time I see them.
Yeah, I
think we just overdosed on Mario this year, that everything just reminds me of Mario.
Yeah, no, it was a definite nice change of pace after that. The start of this session where it was all sort of action, it definitely slows down a bit while you're in that Sunken Frigate.
Yeah, it's absolutely lovely. The music is lovely.
So we're in the mines. Eventually we get over to the reactor core. We've got to find the four switches before you continue, and you can't find them with a regular scanner. You've got to use the thermal scanner, because they're thermal power conduits that we need to shoot. Did everyone realise that straight away?
Yeah. It's all right. But what did cause me massive issues in this section was climbing up that blooming passage from the bottom with the gravity suit up those platforms. Oh, God. It took me ages to get up there.
It's quite hard to see which platforms you're supposed to be jumping at as well. And sometimes you need to jump like backwards to get to a platform behind you. And then you there's these two arms you need to shoot away as well. And they only stay away for 5 seconds. Then they'll come out and try to push you down. And it took me a long time to figure out how to do that as well.
And this is the like this little underwater section where you've got all these like funny angles.
Yeah.
It does a really weird thing with the camera angles.
You don't know whether you're looking up or down, forward or back. You don't know which direction. I was constantly having to look at the map to see which direction I was facing. It took me ages to get up there. And then, of course, when I did get up there, promptly fell back down.
Well, I think when you get up there, does it not tell you that you need the power, you need to find it? So you get all the way to the top and then it says, well, you need to go back down and find these power conduits. Yes.
That's it. Yeah, there's a door, isn't there, that you can't open. So you've got to go, and there is one right at the bottom when you first come in.
Yeah, because you use. I think you can again. You can use the thermal scanner, can't you? And you can look down, and you can see that it's all the way back to where you started.
How precise can I be with my shot?
Of course it's down there. Yep, here we go.
Yeah,
but even once I knew how to get up there, trying to get back up there again was really difficult. It took me ages, this bit. Yeah.
Well, it's that timed platforming again, isn't it? Although you haven't got like a little ticker going off in the background, those like vines or tentacles, whatever you want to call them, they only disappear for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
So it's like, it is that timed platforming.
Yeah. I think I've been going back and forth that area so many times now, so I'm getting used to it. But to begin with, the first couple of times, it took me a long time to get up there. And especially because it's also a bit dark, so it's a little bit hard to see the platforms you're supposed to hit a lot of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I struggled like mad. I was really relieved to kind of finally get on that elevator. Oh, how I shouldn't have been.
So when we get through there, we end up at the Phazon Mines. We get a nice little cutscene. Treat it to a nice little cutscene there.
Yeah, working mines.
Yeah. Reminds you of Dead Space, the mines in there a little bit?
A little bit. It actually feels a little like bland compared to the Sunken Frigate, which I would just loved. And then you get, we're back in this kind of environment. All right, fine.
Yeah. And we got the two little blue switches that we got to find to disable the force field.
Yeah. Now, did you save it? That's the most important question here. That save point. everyone must save.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a long time before you see another one.
Yes. And quite a tough battle before you see another one.
Oh, yes.
And this is in the beginning of the mines. This is where you need to have scanned all of that stuff you found in the research lab as well, because there you read about how they've been experimenting with creating space pirates that like use the same weapons as Shimmers, and then they are color coded by the weapon they're using, and you need to kill them with that weapon. So is it purple or? It's purple for the wave beam. Yeah, when a purple enemy comes along, switch to the wave beam. And when a yellow one is there, switch to the power beam, is that what it's called? And white for ice beam as well?
Yeah.
And the power pirates are the ones which are lethal. So they are the ones that can rinse. They will rinse through your energy gauge. I mean, at this point, I probably have...
Those in the stealth, there are these things that are cloaked as well.
They're the shadow pirates, aren't they? That you need but they're all right because they don't fire at you. They will only rush.
Yeah, but they're straight up in your face very quickly.
Yeah. So you can manage them. If you, as you said earlier, if you've got the thermal visor and you see them from afar, and you know they're coming because obviously once you've been through this section twice, you know where the baddies are. So it's not too bad. But the first time I went through this section, I was pretty careless about, you know, blaze into a room, I'm getting shot. Oh, it's all right, because they're gonna drop health packs and it'll be okay.
Yeah.
I was way too careless. And they were those power beam pirates will muller you if you're not careful. And this is just a classic difficulty spike. This section of the game is way harder. Way harder. Than what had gone before.
A lot more action orientated, right?
Yeah. But if you're using, like, so when you first come across, like, the flying pirates, for example, I thought they were quite difficult to take down. But once you get the ice beam, you fire off a charge shot of that, and then just fire a missile, they're gone. Two shots, so they're down. So you can take them out pretty quick. But
yeah.
Yeah. They also don't come flying towards you as well when you take them out. It's so annoying if you take them out with another weapon and then they just come spiraling towards you every time. And quite often, I always stand, if you come into a room, you'll see two or three of them and they lift off as soon as you come into the room. I normally just hide in the doorway and try and pick them off. But the downside to that is that until I worked out that you could freeze them and take them out with a missile was that you had no room to go left or right, so as they came spiraling towards you, then I would just have to take a hit. That was basically the price I was paying each time, was just allowing them to fly into me. They're annoying.
Really difficult though. I mean, I probably had 9 additional energy packs at this point.
I'm
around there, I think. Yeah,
so I felt ready for it. I felt suitably ready for it. I didn't feel underpowered, but they came me, absolutely came me, and I was on next to no health, and I found a little room with bamboos in that I was just going in and out, killing them, picking up the 10, 20 upgrades, thinking, it's been ages. It's been an hour since I've last saved, and I don't know where the next save point is. And if I die, I will cry. And I died.
Did you cry there?
I died at that pigeon thing. And we'll talk about the elite pirate in a minute. But I died at that last sentry drone thing where you pick up the morph bomb power up before the save room is right there looking at you.
Yeah, because I think this is where we come across the sort of upgraded turrets for the first time.
But we also come across, we should probably talk about the elite pirates.
Yes,
because you do come across an elite pirate on your way to the critical path point.
Yeah, we've seen a few already, but dormant or whatever, sleeping in those in those test tubes. But this one actually I like that it was classical game/film fare. Of course, you walk past it and all of a sudden he just smashes the glass and jumps out at you.
Yeah,
but gave me a scare, so it worked.
But I don't know, how did you guys find it in terms of difficulty?
I didn't really struggle with it. Really? I used a super missile and a few of the regular missiles, and that was all it took, really.
Yeah, I I basically panicked. Would the Wave Buster have any effect on it? Or does...
I tried that. I think that was actually how I killed him the first time.
So, yeah, because so I think I gave him a pretty good burst of that, but I didn't actually mean... I meant to go back and check. I'm not, because there's some attacks that... Do they absorb any attacks, or...
I don't think so.
No. You can target two things on him. You can target the cannon on his back, or you can target the guy himself, I think. And I'm pretty sure I targeted the cannon and shut that away quite quickly with the Wave Buster. And then I could kill him. But I lost so much energy there, so I was very, very underpowered afterwards. So I actually died as well, just a little later. By maybe some towers, maybe one of the pirates. I don't remember, but losing so much progress, it must have been. It felt like it was an hour of fighting space pirates that I lost there. But
I still think what we were talking about on the last episode holds true on this one, even though the enemies are getting more difficult. Is that I guess it's kept pace with it, whereby I think I'm up at this point. I think I finished at the save at about 115 missiles, or possibly even more, actually. So I've got well over 100, probably 110, something like that, missiles at this point. And it does mean that and a lot of that came from the time where I was lost earlier on in the game, plus doing a little bit of exploring. So I have found that each time you come across one of the big bosses, you've got a lot of the heavy weapons that you can use on them that probably takes a lot of the sting out of these fights. I think if you were there with minimum missiles and health, then it would be a very different game.
Yeah, especially health. Yeah. You need to go hunting for those health packs. Yeah. I think I probably had like 8 or 9 like you guys had when I got to this section, and I needed them because even when I finally got there, I only had 1 left, I think, when I got to the save point.
Yeah, you would never survive unless you had a reasonable amount of health.
No, not unless you were really, really... really good at the sort of controls and really understood the attack patterns, which I don't. I just hammer them with all the heavy weapons, and it's worked so far, so I'm not going to change my methods.
Yeah, the Elite Pirate I thought was a bit disappointing, though, because he does sting. If he gets a shot at you, it does take off a lot of health. But he's so slow that you can just lock on, strafe around. I've managed to get him between like a status tube thing and me. And I was just going round the tube, kind of peeking out, and 2 super missiles and he drops.
Really? That's all?
2 super missiles it is.
I'm sure he was a lot tougher. That's weird. Is there a difference between the NTSC and the PAL version in some of those things?
I know of.
Okay. Weird. No. Maybe I was just not that good at fighting him, but I thought it was a tough fight, and especially because the room is so crowded, not with people, but with things. So strafing around is actually quite hard to do because the camera isn't far enough away so you can see what's left and right of you, of course. So you strafe into stuff instead. So I found the fight quite hectic. I was, I almost got killed, but I just made it.
Yeah. It's the panic that will kill you.
Yeah.
I think the first time you come across it, as Andy said, there's that initial panic when he jumps out. Oh my God, my God. Especially because it's been ages since you last saved and you're desperate for a save point at this point. You're thinking, no, I can't die,
die. Maybe that's it.
So, but if you kind of ignore that, actually, it's actually pretty straightforward. I'm hoping that this is a sign of things to come with Omega Pirate, but I suspect it won't be. I suspect that'll be tough.
It is.
And just after, but we don't even get a save point straight away after the Elite Pilot, do we? Because we'd hit that sort of checkpoint at this point for the end of this episode. But we have to go on a little bit further to get to the next available save point. Mm. And we end up in like a pretty cool little sort of electric grid type area.
It's a maze, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We beat that. We get access to the power bomb, which we can then use to access the save area.
And the power bomb can now destroy... Now you can go back and all those things that are Benz and something. What's it called?
Yeah. Bendesium.
Once again, Chris?
Bendesium.
Yeah, all of those obstacles that are made of that, when you scan it, you can now destroy with the power bomb instead. So again, it made me happy because now I had these 2, 3, 4 places I knew. I had to go there and try it here and see what I could access now.
There's been loads of them further back in the game as well, hasn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've started making notes.
Same.
I've started... Yeah, I've started noting that if something says, oh, it's a Bendesium pile of rubble, that I went through my notes and was like, yep, there's one. Happy days. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm not that clever, and I'm a lot more lazy than that. I like to lounge in my couch just with the controller in hand and play this. There's nothing to write on here. So,
oh, I think I did it very begrudgingly. I do add that, but it got to the point where I'd completely lost track, and I thought if I don't change the way I'm playing it, then I think I realized that up until this point that picking up the extra energy and missiles has really been helping me. So I thought quite a few times, especially in some of the sections there where I guess it'll be, well, what's the fire beam called? What's that? What is it?
Plasma beam.
Right. So I guess there's loads of stuff that you'll be able to open up with that as well. So I've just started writing down. I've just got a column for energy tanks, a column for energy missiles, and I just put location, so Findrana, and then the room name and what it is that I'll need to access it, if you like.
Yeah, so it's definitely a good idea. When we record the last episode, we'll see how much further you guys get than me, because I haven't written anything down. I'm just trying to remember it. I'm doing okay.
But imagine that you had got through, and I wasn't a million miles, but imagine that you, because we are talking, if you've gone through and there's loads of things to scan in this area, this does take, best part, an hour and a half, 2 hours if you're slow like I am and read everything and take your time destroying the pirate. But imagine that you get through, and because that electricity in that maze will cause you damage you roll into it. Imagine if you get through all of that and then you had like 20 health points and you rolled into the electricity and it killed you.
I was really sweating when I got to that point, because I didn't have that much energy left. I didn't only have 20, but I only had one of those little squares left, and then whatever was in my bar right now. So I was quite nervous getting through that, but I was so happy that it was actually quite easy, that mace. And then
Was okay. Yeah, it was. Yeah. And obviously, and of course, the other thing about the power bomb is that it's limited, so you only have three.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah.
And the enemies now start dropping. They now start dropping power bomb ammo as well.
And I can tell you that you now have to look for power bomb upgrades as well. Then, like, you can get upgrades to your missiles, you can get upgrades to your power bombs as well.
Oh, okay. So that was going to be my next question. Yeah. Can we upgrade that? But yeah,
because I've been playing this game a bit more than you guys, haven't I? And that's because of you, Andy, right? So somebody wrote on Discord that we were playing this until the Omega Pirate. So I thought, okay, I'm playing this until the Omega Pirate. And I played and I played and I played and I loved it. It was really good. But I spent so many hours, I was thinking, this is going to be a massive episode. This is far too much to cover. But turns out I'm almost at the end of the game, because I just met the Omega Pirate.
And that is really close to the end of the game. So you beat the Omega Pirate, from what I've seen. I think once you beat the Omega Pirate, once you then find the artifacts, it's to the impact crater down into the Metroid Prime battle. So I think literally you've probably only got 2 hours of gameplay left. So you can have a nice, easy couple of weeks now, Max.
Yeah, with lots and lots of frolicking. That'll be good.
I've really missed it. So I got to the milestone on Christmas Eve. I've not played it since Christmas Eve, 28th of December now. And I have really, really missed it. I love it. The game has gone in this section, even though that bit I found it difficult, that bit in the mines and the fact that I died. But I couldn't wait to get back into it and get through it again.
Yeah.
I really, really did. I find that loop really, really addictive. That I just compelled to go again, keep looking.
Yeah, I'm thoroughly enjoying this as well. I mean, the gameplay loop of going to the critical path, finding a new ability, going back, frolicking, finding stuff.
I love it.
Back and forth again. Just works for me. And the backtracking we talked about, that was could be a bit annoying now that we have the ghosts to worry about and we have lots of space pirates. Once you get the plasma beam, for example, and you get, I have a, like 170 missiles now. They're no problem anymore. So it's easy to frolic again.
I can't.
But you guys are in for some tough battles. I'll tell you that. There's more focus on the battling and many space pirates of different colors at the same time. So there'll be more stuff to fight here.
That's definitely been a low point. Well, not a low point. But the worst aspect of the game for me.
I'm actually getting the into it now. I actually enjoy the battles as well. But you need to learn the strafe. For us, it's the B button, the little red button. So you can dash quickly from left to right. You need to learn how to use that and know that, well, the yellow pirates, they're going to stand like this, and then they're going to shoot a little volley that you can avoid, and then so on and so forth. The white pirates, they'll just rush you. Should just shoot them once with a powered up ice beam, and then they're gone. They just need a missile. What is it with the purple ones? I forget how you.
You just wave beam them, don't you? Just try and power up.
I think you actually need to just fight them in the same way as you fight the ones with the power beam.
On the GameCube, what do you use to swap between your weapons? Is it via the D-pad?
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's the little analog stick.
And they're each mapped to a direction, are they? So it's literally just... I think this is where... there's pros and cons for both, but I think this is where the GameCube would be more enjoyable than what the Wii version is, because on the Wii version, you've got to hold down the plus button, which brings up on your HUD, the four weapons or however many weapons you've collected, and you've got to point at it to select it. It's quite tricky if this is what I'm wondering just when you talk about this. If you're mid battle and you're having to juggle weapons, or even just the act of, because it happens quite a lot in that section where there was a lot of, I can't remember, I think it was, there was a lot of doors that you had to use the ice beam to go through. Or you had to use the wave beam. But as soon as you're on the other side, there was no benefit to having that weapon. Yep. And so you were constantly swapping back and forth between the buttons. It does get quite tiresome on the Wii, and it is quite annoying during a battle having to do that.
But in most battles, it'll be okay because it'll only be in waves. You get two of these color, two of this color, and two of this color. It's rare that they are... Sometimes they're mixed later on, but that's if you do it wrong. I mean, if you run through a large room, you'll activate all of them and you'll have a huge battle with different colored pirates, but you can't draw them like two or three or three at a time in the same color.
That's good to know.
I mean the game is really quick. You just flick the C-stick. And same with the visors. I imagine on the visors on the Wii, that's mapped to the D-pad, is it?
No, they're on the minus button. Minus for visors, plus for weapons.
Okay.
So with the GameCube, it is just really quick. I mean, you can just go from weapon to visors just really, really quick.
Yeah, because that's something that I guess once you get quite okay with the controls, it must be quite nice, actually. You must be able to flick between them all quite quickly whilst mid-battle, whereas it's definitely more of a deliberate movement on the Wii, and sometimes it's not, it doesn't flow very nicely if you're trying to do something else at the same time.
Yeah. What are your guys' play time? So the game tells me that I've spent 14 hours and 10 minutes, but that is so false because it pauses when you're in the menu. And I spend loads of time in the menu looking up creatures and reminding myself of the lore and the pirate data. It wouldn't surprise me if I've got at least 5 hours on top of that actual game time. Have you guys made the note of how long the game tells you you've been in game?
Not exactly, but I think it must be a similar sort of 14 or 15 hours, but I know I've played it for longer than that.
Yeah.
I'm the same. So mine's 15 hours, but I've probably spent 15 seconds in the menus, to be honest. I haven't. I basically keep telling myself as I'm playing it, and I'm scanning a lot, and I think, right, I'll just, at some point, I'm going to stop and have a proper read of all the lore and all the enemy types, and I think, well, I'll just go through that door first and then I'll see what's there and then I'll do it, and here we are 15 hours later in the game and I still haven't stopped and read any of it.
Yeah, I've got no idea how many hours I've spent, but lots and lots of hours.
You'll see, we don't worry, we'll tell you what the lore and the data is, Andy.
Yeah, I'm just saving it. I'm basically just going to read it all like a novel at the end of the game.
It's good. Like, I think I didn't realize that when you scan something, if you keep pressing, for us, it's the A button. When you scan something, it actually kind of tells you what it is you've scanned. So if you scan a Chozo lore and keep pressing A, what I was doing is scanning it and then going into the menu and trying to find the new bit and reading it. Didn't realize it actually tells you on the screen.
Well, I guess so. Am I right in thinking, Jim, then on the Wii? So when you scan something, if it's got more to tell you, it comes up with a prompt for the A button, doesn't it?
It does. On the game.
Yeah. So you press that. Is that all the information that it's putting into your log, or is there more?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. I'm reading all that stuff.
Well, there you go then.
It's just I haven't gone into the log to subsequently read it again or anything. There's been a couple of occasions where I've scanned something and I've realized it's given me the A prompt, but I've actually exited it. And so I just rescan it and make sure that I've kind of clicked my way through all the dialogue windows or text windows before I move on. So I have, don't you worry, Chris, I have been reading things.
and that's good because it sort of pauses the game, doesn't it? While you're scanning, it's still in real time and you can still get hit by enemies. But then when you tap the A button again, you pause it so you can read like the information on whatever it is you're scanning, whether it's an enemy or a bit of lore or whatever.
Yeah. So, we now have to we got the simple task, well, simple for Mads, of just going and finishing the game then, guys.
Yeah. So I think in terms of, a checkpoint.
Easy.
We push on to the end.
You roll those credits, man. That's what we need
to
do. I'm
sure there'll still be 7 to 10 hours in the game.
Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah.
Because I love the thing. I love it.
Yeah, me too.
I really enjoy it. This is going to be a game where I'm going to be disappointed when it ends. I know.
And you guys, you've got some great power-ups coming as well. I mean, the grapple beam is great fun.
The grapple beam's the one I'm looking forward to.
Plasma rifle opens up some new and interesting things as well. And yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah, I've already got a couple of things in my notes where things that are hidden behind ice that I know I'm going to be able to get to. There's an artifact that's hidden behind ice. I know that in the control tower in Fendrana.
Yeah, and when you go into the Shigoth battle? When you go into the Shigoth battle, then right outside of that room, there's a statue there with some frozen hands as well, isn't there?
Pass, I think. So I was making an effort after the last time you were saying, Mads, where if you come into a room and whether it's an artifact or a missile or an energy tank, does it all give off the same that same hum, or does it differ depending on what the power up is?
That's a good question. I don't know, actually. I thought it was just the same noise.
No.
When you were talking about this one there on that control tower area, Chris, where is it? Because I was going absolutely mad. I can hear it, but I can't see it from anywhere. Should you be able to see it?
So there's two doors either end of the rooftop where you've got the pillars of the tower.
Yep.
At either end. Yep. It's when you first see the space pirates.
Yep.
In that section, there's loads of crates.
Yep.
So you can climb into, you can jump up using the double jump on top of each of the doors.
Yep.
And at one end, there is a window out of which you can scan. You can scan a window which says that there is a sheet of ice or something over this window. And beyond that is the tower. So I reckon you melt the ice with the plasma beam and then you can missile the tower. And the riddle says that you bring down, to get the artifact, you have to bring down the tower in Fendrana.
Got you. Okay, dokie. Because I've been, as you first come into that room, I was going off, so I guess into the top right corner of that room.
It's the other end.
Yeah. So the opposite side and the right hand side. Yeah. So I was, because when I was in there, and I could hear it humming and it was driving me absolutely mad. I was climbing all around and I thought maybe I hadn't scanned something. I must have missed something that I could scan it, but I was certainly having a look for things that I could scan, but I could never.
In one of the rooms, the rooms are identical. In one of the rooms, you can't scan anything, and in one of them, you can scan the ice over the window.
Okay. Cool.
There we go.
I'll go and write it in my notebook.
Do you want to, write it down, mate. In the column for artifacts.
Yes. I'll have three by the time I finish the game, though.
Do you want to take us home, Jim?
Yeah, and that concludes episode 2 of Metroid Prime. Before we go, if people want to get involved in the playthrough community, then we've got the Discord channel. There's a channel for each game. Even if it isn't the current one, the old channels are still going to be active. Even if you're sort of playing Metroid Prime whilst we're playing something else, we'll still be there to sort of chat as well as everyone else in the community. We're on Twitter at playthrough_pod. The website is playthroughpod.com. And you'll find links there for all of the socials, so Twitter, Facebook, everything. There's also episodes there and even more information on the games that we're playing. Gents,
fantastic.
I'll see you all for part three, the final part, in 2021.
Wow. That sounds good.
It does, doesn't it?
Let's hope so.
It does.
Happy New Year again.
Good stuff. Yeah, Happy New Year, guys.
Yep, Happy
See
New
you
Year,
on the other side.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care, guys. Take care. Cheers.
Bye. All the best. Cheerio.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Blah 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 bl